Hey there, ho there, you're listening to Super Tool Shed, the only podcast on the internet that features both Fat Man and Black Man on Batman. I'm Bennett the Sage, I'm joined by Mark the Engineer, and today's podcast is all about the Caped Crusader. We both finished his latest game, Arkham Origins, and a little town called San Francisco is changing its name to Gotham City for a day to make a sick child's wish come true. But before that, the pleasantries. Mark, how have you been?
Doing all right. You know why? Because it's not October anymore. I can't stop talking about October. I'm happy it's not October, and November is going to be exciting for everything that we're doing, but the next 2 months are going to be exciting for reasons we can't say yet.
Can I say it's just obviously, it's just so creepy to hear you talk in an upper register.
You know, I didn't even want to talk about this, but apparently it's just creepy for me to talk at all on camera. Just, no. I want to kind of put a moratorium on this, just because it's been going on all day. If you've been paying attention to the comments on the Twilight of the Cockroaches commentary, there's a dude in the comments named Nicholas Gray, who initially wasn't, he's not a fan of the critic like me and Bennett. He kind of took umbrage to the fact that I was playing Duke Phillips, not understanding that Duke Phillips was a parody of Ted Turner. And the guy made his points really well, and I finally did make my entrance into the comments, which, as you all know, I very rarely do. So, but he made his points well, and I just kind of want to put a moratorium on it, just kind of leave the dude alone, because it's not like he's just raucously going, it's like, no, this is terrible. At the very least, he had an argument, whether or not, you know, any of us individually consider it to be valid, whether it be me or Bennett or you, a listener who happens to come upon this comment. The engine will only keep going if you keep putting gas in it. So let's just all agree to disagree. Well, not really agree to disagree, but let's just all agree that
the dude's been razzed enough.
Yeah, he's been razzed enough, and I'm a black voice actor that happened to play a character on screen so rarely that was a corn-poned, good old boy, terrible parody of Ted Turner. So that said, it's been an interesting day, but now, of course, we built our lead back up. Finally, like we're like three scripts deep now.
I know, I can't really talk about the scripts in the later half of the month. I mean, we do know that Fist of the North Star is coming up, and that is going to be fun because, well, it's Fist of the North Star. It's probably up there as far as my favorite anime films are concerned, because it's just, it knows what it is. That's the one thing that no one can take away from Fist of the North Star. It knows what it is, and it knows how to play its hand accordingly. I'll go, not to spoil the review or anything like that, just know that going in that, yes, I'm going to poke fun at the movie because, yeah, it is kind of a cheesy 80s movie. Let's not kid ourselves here. It's a cheesy 80s movie, and you can have fun with it, but that's the key word here. It's good fun.
Yes, and that's what we need a dose of, because, all right, you've dealt with our artsy fartsiness for the last episode, and before that a crossover that didn't go quite right, so we'll go back to the formula that everybody's comfortable with. However, it does bear being said that resistance to change has been in a fever pitch for the last couple of weeks. We're not even promising like sweeping changes to Anime Abandoned. We're just like, let's have fun with this. Let's do this bullshit thing. And a ton of people are like, change! I find this thing scary. Where's my gun? And you know, that's the nature of people. You know, that's why there is a book in this earth that exists called Who Moved My Cheese? But we recognize that change is scary, but we're not doing any sweeping changes on Anime Abandoned. It's just every once in a while we have an idea where it's like, let's just chase that and see where it goes.
And in the case of Fist of the North Star, it led to somewhere very, very I don't want to say scary, because that implies that the end is going to be horrifying. But it led to somewhere that I never expected at all. One of the best parts about writing is chasing an idea. And it, especially if you're doing this with more than one person. Where we both, like, the Fist of the North Star was written with kind of like as a back and forth between me and Mark. It was actually I think it is the very first Anime Abandoned script where you were part of the writing process from the beginning. So
other than
there was no
Twilight of the Cockroaches, yeah.
Other than Twilight of the Cockroaches, but yours, the story is that I hurt my wrist and it still is kind of hurting, but not as bad as it was. And I couldn't type.
And this isn't, like, for the record, this isn't some bullshit thing. Bennett is actually and legitimately developing a repetitive stress injury. Yeah. He's got, like, shooting pains in his wrist, and it's going up his arm. And at first, it's like, oh, you getting a heart attack, Bat Boy? And like, no, that's not it. So
no, it's not my left side. It's my right side. And thank you for making a heart attack joke. Like, I'm telling you I'm in pain, and your response is, what, you getting a heart attack, Fat Boy? About time.
Look, I didn't say about time, but you are the person that cooks burgers in steak fat, so.
I haven't done that in forever, okay? I'm just telling you a recipe that I had that I haven't made in a while because it's a very time-consuming process. All right. Beside the point, my wrist was really hurting me and I couldn't type. So Mark basically had to play secretary and kind of be my hands, as it were, on Google Docs. And what that meant was that he had to be part of the writing process from the beginning. It wasn't this usual me in my vacuum writing the script and him coming in at the last minute saying, yeah, this sounds good, this sounds good, this sounds good, this sounds good. And I think that the script is better because of it, or at least in this particular case, because you never saw Fist of the North Star, the film, before, did you?
No, I watched new Fist of the North Star, and I'd seen bits and pieces because once upon a time, anime used to be kind of a back room, you know, handing VHS tapes around sort of experience where you never really got directly into anime. Someone got you into it. But I never had a set of friends that was, like, handing around Yuritsaki Doji and
I don't know what kind of friends you'd have to pass around Yuritsaki Doji, but
like, there were people, like, in middle school, there were people that I know that would hand that out, and they'd be like, you gotta watch this. Because it was just kind of the cool thing when you were a nerd. Like, it's like, look at this almost porn I've got. But I was never really interested in it. And I also never had any friends that, like, in their little VHS circle would hand around Fist of the North Star because it was just kind of assumed that you'd already seen it. So they would start telling stories about it, and I'd go, yeah, yeah, fucking heads explode, man.
You never watched it in the day in your life, have you, nerd?
Yeah, really. So I was actually hanging out in the AV room with my group of friends watching news radio. So that's what we would do. Not even kidding.
Sorry.
Every day at lunch, because I've always had older friends, and I had older friends in middle school. So my older friends had run of the AV room, and every day at lunch, I would skip the lunchroom, and I would just go upstairs to the AV room, and we would just watch news radio for an hour. So, and no anime ever made it into that room because only one of them was an anime guy, but he was like a elitist otaku asshole. So he didn't want to share. He was one of those guys who was like, I'm going to study Aikido. Why? And, you know, some bullshit reason. So, I'd never seen the original Fist of the North Star. And still to this day, technically, I haven't.
I was about to say, sorry. This is the kind of asshole that would bother to spend the two extra bucks to get the subbed copy of the VHS instead of the dub.
Seriously. So, but yeah, I never saw the original. I did see new Fist of the North Star when that was on TV. I think it was on G4 at one point. So when G4 was still a channel and way before G4 got terrible. So I was kind of going into this blind.
And, like, I was playing the movie on my end, and he can only hear it through my Skype microphone on Skype. And the things he would say that just would illuminate, it would help illuminate talking points for the review. One of the things he noticed that I just kind of took for granted, but once he explained it to me, or at least made clear his own thoughts on it, I said, yeah, you're right. It was the fact that for its time, the voice acting here is actually really, really good. We're talking like, I think it was dubbed in the late 80s, maybe early 90s.
Yeah, and I was shocked. You know, you hear stories about the original, and you just kind of go like, yeah, I know what this is going to be like. But then as I'm listening to this radio play that is Fist of the North Star, the movie, I was genuinely like, wow, that's actually acting going on. That's not just some kid in the mailroom that they pulled in at the studio.
And I think that was a point that needed to be made in the review, especially with the route the review is going to take. Like I said, about having fun with it.
Yeah, and we'll have a nice good dose of fun this month, because this month is kind of the unofficial man month.
Taking that as
the original man month was meant to be kind of this terrible Bennett gritting his teeth, shirtless,
just like tearing a phone book in half, like, time to eat some raw meat and fuck anything that moves.
Yeah. And thankfully, for all the fun that we've been having with ourselves lately, that didn't make it to final. So no new alternate Bennett character, no fucking Flint Mancock or something.
Oh, you just gave me inspiration for a new character to be featured on Anime Abandoned. Flint Mancock. As opposed to Flint Womancock.
So thankfully that didn't make it to final. You can expect the next three episodes to be services as normal. Thank God for some of you, you know, because like I said, resistance to change. but it's going to be a fun month. And next month is going to be real fun.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be super duper fun. But I don't think not nearly as much fun as I had with Arkham Origins. Transition! There is this polarizing attitude towards Arkham Origins. And when it comes to games like this, I'm always find myself sort of sitting on either side of it. Like, yeah, I see why people don't like this game, but I can't throw myself into their camp because here I am playing the game and having fun. It's like, obviously this is the worst game in the entire Arkham series. There is no debate about this.
Nope.
None whatsoever. But I think my experience, at least from what you told me on our little Skype dates we have, that your experience was infinitely worse than mine, because yours, like a lot of people's experience, has been, well, let's just say that Mr. Freeze may not be in the game, but that doesn't stop the game from freezing.
Seriously, this is the Twilight Zone for me, because normally it's the PS3 version of a game that's buggy as shit. And the 360 version is just like, nah, you know what? We can just make the game good enough and just worry about it being stable. Forget fucking ratcheting the graphics until the system crashes. So, not today. Today is not that day.
Well, then again, the game is always, the series has always been kind of like a Sony, not quite exclusive, but there's always been like that extra added bit.
Yeah, they always get the like the really awesome shit.
Yeah, except for this time around, which kind of speaks volumes. But maybe the added thing is the game won't freeze.
Yeah, that's it. Your system exclusive for buying Arkham Origins on PS3 is that you can play through the entirety of the fucking game without having to restart your system against your fucking will. There it is, right there.
That's a feature, man.
That is an absolute feature. Doesn't matter where you buy it from, GameStop, Walmart, Target, doesn't matter. So long as you buy it on PS3, your added feature, your non-DLC bonus is that you get to play the game in its entirety however long you fucking want.
You know, if this game were published by EA, it would be downloadable content.
And Xbox users have to wait for the fucking stability DLC. That's what it's gonna be.
Stability DLC.
That's what it is, man. And it would be the highest point of irony if the stability DLC was a patch, and the patch itself came rolled into to a DLC episode tied into the origin of Mr. Freeze.
That was one character I missed in this game. I know that he couldn't quite fit in the...
No, because Mr. Freeze deserves... I mean, because this entire thing was about, you know, origin stories, so it's a lot of Batman Year One, to which I actually had a whole conversation with my girlfriend about how, you know what would have really just knocked this game right out of the park if it was fucking Bryan Cranston as Jim Gordon? I would have... For all the smallness that Gordon represents in Arkham Origins... If it was Cranston, it just would have been just a little bit better.
Just a bit.
Because if you haven't seen Batman Year One, do yourself a favor. And I'm not guaranteeing that Year One is amazing by any means. It's a great film, but the guy playing Bruce Wayne ruins it.
The guy playing Bruce Wayne, and I cannot get over that Catwoman design. She looks like a transvestite.
Yeah, and it doesn't get any better that it's Eliza Dushku playing Catwoman. But you know what? The upside is Steve Blum plays a pimp. So,
which is always fun.
Yeah. It's always fun when he gets away from the Spike Spiegel and gets into the completely hilarious Scooby-Doo type shit. But I just think that Jim Gordon would have been a whole lot better if for those few lines that he had, that they were all read by Cranston. Because what the fuck is he doing now?
Hey, exactly.
Counting his money and polishing his awards. That's fucking what.
And making cameos on Anime Abandoned. Or at least he would have if he answered his mail.
Yeah, right. So,
he goes on to fucking Conan, like, during the finale of Breaking Bad, and he says, oh, what are you going to do next? Like, well, I'm making a small cameo in an internet show that nobody's ever heard of.
There you go.
And then Conan just kind of gives him the deer in headlights stare.
That said, my experience in Arkham, after you get about, I would say, halfway through the game, was start a mission, get mostly through the mission, freeze, walk through Arkham, be on your way somewhere, freeze, walk into a building, freeze, in the middle of a fucking scrimmage, freeze. And it actually got to the point when I beat the game that after I was trying to complete case files that the game became near unplayable. I actually had to freeze 2 minutes into the game starting. And I went, nope, I'm done. I want to see where the rest of this goes. I want to take down Black Mask. I want to see... I want... Because I know that the entire thing with... What was her name? Shiva?
Mm-hmm.
I know that was all going to boil down to, like, League of Shadows, and this is Ra's al Ghul. Have you accepted Ra's al Ghul as your personal lord and savior? But you know what? When the game's freezing in a world record of 2 minutes, then, you know, I'm done. I'll wait. I will get the game when it's greatest hits in, like, $10. And I'll...
Hopefully by then there's the stability DLC.
Fucking seriously, man. Jesus.
Well, my experience is, like I said, a lot cleaner than yours. And I took my time with the game because I'm afforded that time now that I don't play games explicitly to review them. So I was able to get a lot further into the Enigma data packet searching. That's just sort of my bread and butter. I like kind of combing through the level and just trying to find how... Okay, there's a data packet. How do I get it? Excuse me.
Yeah, and I do have to say, the puzzles in this game are so insultingly easy.
Some of them are. A few others are kind of clever, but not quite.
Honestly, most of the puzzles that I found, and I got, I don't know, I think like 40% completion overall. Most of them that I found were just like environmental puzzles that if you know how to use the system, like here, wall jump off of here and glide down here and do this, or, you know, do the dive bomb so you get the shockwave that knocks out all the pressure pads. Like, I just found all that stuff really easy. Now, that's not to say that I was ever a fan of find the fucking question mark. I hated those. I really did. Because it was so determinate on you need to stand in this exact spot at this time of day, and there better not be a single enemy in the way of this fucking camera, you know, in the face of this picture that you're trying to take, or else fuck you.
Oh God, the alignment question. Oh,
yeah, Jesus. I hated those so much. But I'll say this, is that there's a difference between making them way too hard in a system that really doesn't like you, and then making them so easy that they're not even worth doing. Because running around picking up bullshit. That's really what it is that you're trash picking in Gotham.
I love the sort of mentality of Enigma. He's like, don't gather my data packets, even though I make it so that you could find them.
Well, that's collect them. I really don't think that has a correlation to anything. I think that was supposed to be like, well, Enigma's clever and whatever, but honestly, I did like that it's about, you know, Enigma being the vigilante who's trying to use information to affect change in Gotham, as opposed to running around beating people up and scaring them. Where he believes that he's a hero. He knows that he's not going about it, you know, by what would be good vigilante means. But he's very anti-hero in this game. And I thought that was kind of a nice angle to play. But I couldn't get through it because the game just... Because that's when I actually got really frustrated. When I unlocked the last tower, or when I was on my way to unlocking the last tower. The one that's in the island on North Gotham. You get through the one room with the electrified fence, and I beat up all the dudes in the room. And then as soon as I walk up to the door, it says, you have to secure the area. And I'm just looking around, like, and everybody's unconscious, going, how do you want me to kill them?
Yes, Bruce, kill them. Feed me a stray cat.
Very, very much so. Like it was insane. And I sat there for 5 minutes throwing batarangs, setting off explosive gel, just trying anything, going through the menus for a while, just like maybe I could just force it to reset. Nope. Gotta reset the whole damn thing. And then it got to a point when I couldn't interrogate people either, where I would beat up 15 guys, and then there's the one guy who's like I've been dishonored, you defeated me. And I walk up and I'm like, I'm gonna interrogate the shit out of you, and there's no prompt.
I'm running into that problem now after I've beaten the game, but I'm not quite sure if it's going to be a returning problem. I've yet to turn it back on and see if I can, you know, clean up the streets of Gotham, because, you know, that's what I am. I'm Gotham's protector. I am the hero that they need, not the one they deserve. I am the polite Batman. Criminals, be aware that I am stalking you, and I will find you, and I will harm you.
I am vengeance. I am the night.
Okay, there's Ben Affleck's Batman right there.
One of the funnier things that happened earlier today was that you brought up that we have a lot of episodes centered around Batman.
Well, you know, when you're a nerd podcast, you know, the subject of the Caped Crusader is going to happen.
But it just seems to happen a weird amount where we don't even intend to start doing Batman episodes. But what the general opinion so far has been today was that, like, what, you're going to do another Tool Shed? Didn't you just do Tool Shed? It's like, yeah, but we didn't do Tool Shed for all of October. So, except for the end, and I don't really count that as doing an episode in October. I just kind of call that doing it on the eve of November. So... There was a news story that kind of prompted, because there was a line of conversation that was happening, and we said to ourselves, you know what, there's a whole Tool Shed out of this. But we're getting to that. But my overall opinion of Arkham Origins is that it's a game that deserves to exist, which it's not the best of the trilogy. It's definitely in keeping with that tried and true tradition that the third of any trilogy just fucking sucks.
I don't know. Back to the Future Part 3 was,
you know, there are people that argue that Back to the Future Part 3 is bad. I want these people rounded up into camps and gassed. Because they're fucking wrong. Like, to be Jeremy Clarkson about it, I want them shot in front of their families. But but there are people that argue that Back to the Future Part 3 is bad. And I don't know what makes them think it's bad. It's sci-fi and the Wild West and fucking DeLoreans on tracks and shit. But no. So Arkham Origins is in keeping with the general tradition that the third of any trilogy is bad. And the reason why it's bad is because the game itself, the story isn't bad. You know, like, the progression of the game is not bad. It's playing the game itself. It's the combat system being clunkier than it's ever been. It's the stability of the game being so completely unstable that you just wonder whether or not they're really hiring QA testers, or if their QA testers are just sitting in the room with their thumbs up their asses. You know, like what the fuck do you do as a QA tester that this game got through?
I'm of the opinion that this game was rushed.
It really feels it, but it only feels that way from a technical perspective, not from an execution perspective. I think, because, and this is this is something that I've had long conversations about, where you'll see QA testers listed in the production credits of tons of things, plenty of software. But the thing is that the opinion that's becoming more and more readily exercised is, why would we spend money on a firm to do QA testing? Or why is it that we would have, why would we pay in general for QA testing when we're pretty much paying for crash scenarios? We're paying people to try and find crash scenarios when we could never possibly go through the potpourri of things that could go wrong within the amount of time that we have between development and launch. So instead, why don't we spend less on QA testing and more on patch development and just make the consumer QA test for us? Because then you have a nice large sampling of everything that can go wrong, and you didn't have to pay a dime for that research. They paid you. And generally speaking, nobody revolts against that. Nobody, you know, starts whipping out the fucking torches and the banners, and it's like, don't fucking make us QA test for you. How fucking dare you? Like, everybody just kind of says, like, oh, well, the game's buggy, but they'll patch it. You're right, they are going to fucking patch it, because they released it buggy on purpose so that you would tell them what's wrong. Period. I'm starting to think that they only put QA testers in there, like, but if you started looking up names of QA testers, those people just don't exist. They just show up in, like, obituary records and shit.
Alan Smithy appeared 4 times during that list.
Seriously, like, that's what I think is going on, is that they're spending less on QA testing because all it does is delay development, and maybe it's that they don't need a QA team of 50, 100, 200. Instead, they just need, like, 20 people to play the game for collectively, like, maybe 200 hours. And then they go, well, are there any massive game-breaking bugs? Well, none that we could find, all running on the exact same system. All right, it's gold. Put it out.
Let's make a mint!
Like, and that's what fucking happened with Arkham Origins. There's no reason why it is that this game on 360, which, you know, is nothing but a glorified PC. It's what was at the time middle range PC. There was nothing complicated about it or its fucking architecture. So there is no reason why it is that the PlayStation version of this game should be so fucking bad, when it shouldn't be any more dissimilar than the PC version, which I'm told is actually pretty fine.
By the way, am I the only one you know who played Arkham Origins on the PS3?
Yep.
So, you know, if and you and your experience with freezing is not just yours, right?
No.
It's also...
I actually, there are friends that follow me on Twitter where I would be sitting on Xbox Live and I got a couple of messages where they were asking, is this freezing happening for you a lot? And it's like, yeah, is it happening for you? Absolutely, it's happening for me all the fucking time now. It's getting worse. And it's true. The progression of Arkham Origins is the deeper you get into the game, the worse the freezing gets because there's more elements. So the further you get into the game, there's snipers on the roofs and there's different types of enemies and there's Bane guys and there's fucking huge Titan dudes and big heavies and shit like that. So the further you get into the game, the worse the freezing gets on Xbox 360. But so far, it seems to be that the PlayStation version is perfectly fine, which might be that they developed the PlayStation version first. And then, because that's really what's happening a lot, too, is that they developed the PS3 version first, and then they use trickle-down in order to develop the PC and Xbox versions, which is fine. The PlayStation 3 is far more complicated than a PC or fucking Xbox architecturally. But something went fucking wrong in translation here. There's no doubt in my mind. And it made me kind of hate the game. By the end of the game, I felt good. Like, I beat it. I beat it in about 3 days. But I didn't feel like, you know, this is a good game to go out on.
Nah, I don't think this is a game that the series will go out on. But I will say that fourth game comes around, there has to be something new. The combat system, okay, there's some things that needs to be changed in the combat system. The counters, especially, no more of those fucking shields. Like, all right, stun batons I can handle. Even the knife I handle, but the fucking car door or the riot shields, no. Toss those out the fucking window. I hate them.
But they're a whole lot easier to deal with than the knife guys. You're dealing with the knife guys in a way that you're not supposed to deal with the knife guys because they break your combo. But the knife dodge still doesn't fucking work. Hasn't worked since they introduced it, period. So my final verdict on Arkham is it's a worthwhile experience if you're getting it out of a red box. But do not under any circumstances buy it at retail. Just don't. You can beat it in 3 days. You can beat it in less than 3 days on normal. And it's like, and because especially if you're getting it on Xbox, like if you have a PS3, get it on PS3. But if you only have an Xbox, it's fine to get it on Xbox. If you get it out of a red box or from Gamefly or what the fuck ever, because you will be so angry that you spent $60 plus tax on this game. Even if you bought it used, you'd be angry that you spent $54 on this game. Like, it's just not... It's a game that totally does not justify its price point based on the fact that you can't reliably play it on 360. You just can't.
And that is going to color expectations. I mean, I had my frustrations with the game, certainly, but they didn't exactly... All right, all my frustrations in the game were because of its gameplay. Like, the last Bane fight, I hated. Oh, God, did I fucking hate that last
Yeah, when he fight. Fucking trucks towards you, you dodge out of the way, and he just snap changes direction.
Yeah, that happens. And also, like, this bullshit reasoning, like, oh, yeah, I've got him down to a third of his health. Wait a minute. Oh, no! Now they're blacking my cowl vision because of the reasons.
Yeah.
They couldn't, like, I would have been fine if they just done that from the beginning.
Yeah, like if they would have just left Detective Vision alone or fucked it up from the beginning of the fight. Okay, fine.
Yeah, fine. You know, that's just one hurdle that I get past. But don't just show me the path to how to beat it, then pull the rug right under my feet while I'm just the last boundary there. Also, trying to steer Bane into one of those electrified fences is just fucking... Ugh.
So yeah, the Bane fight didn't really work out too well. But yeah, it's not the game I wanted to end the year on, and I'm not getting a PS4 or an Xbox One immediately, because if you buy a fucking console at launch, you're a sucker. Very simple as that. We'll have another tool shed on that when that comes down, but the general wisdom is if you buy a console at launch, you're a fucking sucker. Because I don't know how many launches it's going to take of big consoles before you realize that the Prime version, the original version, the Gen 1 version, is not the version you want.
The version you want is probably 2 or 3 years down the line.
Mm-hmm.
But because you can't play games, if you want to play those games, you're going to have to, I'd say, wait maybe 5 or 6 months.
There's nothing coming out at launch that I fucking want anyway.
Well, wait a minute. Isn't Destiny coming out launch?
I don't give two shits about Destiny. I really don't. Honestly.
I thought you were kind of down for that.
I'm down for it. Totally down for it. But it's not like it's a ticking clock experience where it's like, oh, I gotta be there on day one. You know, gotta fucking, I bleed blue. Fucking Halo, man. Bungie. Like, no, I'm not that guy. You know?
You're not that...
I fucking love Halo, but this isn't Halo, is it? It's fucking...
No.
It's Borderlands Bungie Edition.
Which I'm interested to see.
And I'd be happy to see it run, but it's not something I gotta be there for day one. That's for goddamn sure. So,
I mean,
there's nothing coming out at launch that I want. And honestly, very honestly, there is never anything at launch coming out that you really want. You just kind of compromise and you go, well, this doesn't really look all that great, but you know, I guess I could do it. Cause I remember, man, fucking, I bought 360 at launch, second day out, bought a basic and a memory card because I wasn't an idiot trying to hold out for a fucking elite and, or a premium at the time. It was called a premium. And, I bought Perfect Dark Zero.
Oh,
I said, I like the original Perfect Dark. I'm glad that Joanna Dark's making a comeback. Joanna Dark didn't make a fucking comeback in this game. We haven't heard shit since. And the reason why is because it was developed as a launch title. And launch titles don't always work out as well as Halo did. Sorry to tell you. And you know why Halo worked out at launch so well? It's because Halo wasn't originally an Xbox game. It was in development for years and years before Microsoft snapped them up. So that's why Halo worked as a launch title. But generally speaking, launch titles just don't fucking work.
What about like games like Second Son? Infamous Second Son.
Don't care. And that's coming from me as an Infamous fan. Because as far as I know, Cole McGrath is dead. I mean, he's not dead, but he's dead. And I'm sure that the story is going to be good and that when I actually sit down and play it, I'll thoroughly enjoy it because Sucker Punch really knows how to put together a game. But there's something much darker about Second Son that I don't like. It's very prototype looking. I didn't like Prototype.
Oh, God, Prototype. You know, I've basically said that I'm ending Sage Reviews, and I'm looking back on the games that I played my illustrious 5-year career as a game reviewer, and I'm thinking about the best games I reviewed and the worst games I reviewed, but my mind wanders to the games that are just slipped through the cracks, games I remember playing, but I don't remember anything else about them, and one of those games was the first Prototype. Talk about a game that, for all the buildup, just there was nothing to it.
Nope. It was just really a non-game. Like, you just don't really remember it. You don't remember the gameplay too much. You remember that it came out at the same time as Infamous, but that's about it.
And I like the idea of like taking over someone's body and like pretend and like passing yourself off as them. I said, yeah, that's really good. Wish they could do something interesting with this though.
Yeah, because it's not like it was the first game of its type. Fucking Crackdown. Crackdown had all the promise in the world. Crackdown looked like a game that promised a trilogy. People loved it so much.
Then Crackdown 2 happened.
Mm-hmm. And everybody stopped caring. Because the thing about sandbox games is that, you know, there really is only so much that you can do before you start to get bored. And the only game that kind of persistent, the only two games that really persistently make that not true, I guess, is Grand Theft Auto and Saints Row. I don't really count Assassin's Creed because people are already getting tired of Assassin's Creed.
I was tired of Assassin's Creed by Brotherhood, let alone like Assassin's Creed 3 or that other sequel to Assassin's Creed 2.
Yeah, you've already made very clear that you want to take Assassin's Creed behind the shed and fucking cock the shotgun.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, like me, not as a sandbox person, is even saying like I enjoy Infamous, but Second Son doesn't really interest me, and like Crackdown just came and fucking went, fucking Prototype came and went, and when you remove Infamous from the equation, when you remove a lot of the launch titles from the equation, you just kind of it leaves me going, there's nothing at launch that I want, and there's really never been anything at any launch that I really really wanted. But you don't want to go out and buy a system day one and then not have anything to do but look at it and go, it's so pretty.
And you know what the hell of it is, I'm probably going to get the PS4 for Christmas.
Yeah, well, you enjoy your new paperweight.
Mm.
So, all of that wrapping into Arkham Origins, there is a news article that we did want to talk about, which is San Francisco to be transformed into Gotham City for a 5-year-old's Make-A-Wish.
We got the article right here, and for those of you not in the know, well, 5-year-old Miles is a sunny, positive little boy who is fighting a battle against leukemia. Thanks to the Make-A-Wish Foundation, he will get the chance to fulfill his dream of being, wait for it, Batman! On November 15th, Make-A-Wish Foundation will transform San Francisco into Gotham City for a day, with thousands of volunteers already signed up to play along. Along with a grown-up Batman sidekick, Miles will get a call from the police chief and jump into his very own Batmobile to defend the city against some of his fiercest foes, including the Riddler and Penguin. Make-A-Wish Bay Area describes the plot line of the day. After rescuing a damsel in distress from the cable car tracks in Nob Hill and capturing the Riddler in the act of robbing a downtown vault, Batman will eat his lunch at the Burger Bar in San Francisco. This is straight out of an Adam West episode, isn't it?
Yes.
Directly above Union Square. While at Burger Bar, he will get a call on his bat phone to go to the window, where he will look down and see a huge group of volunteers jumping up and down asking for Batman's help. Why? I don't know, plotline. Why are you asking me? You know. Because the Penguin will be kidnapping a famous Gotham City mascot. The getaway car will be visible on Union Square, a convertible so that everyone can see what is happening, and the chase will be on. After catching the Penguin, Batman will make his final stop at City Hall, where the mayor and the police chief of Gotham City will thank him and give him the key to the city. We plan on having hundreds of volunteers and donors collected to cheer and thank our Batman. The Make-A-Wish Foundation will provide more details and updates on the event soon. Check their page at Miles' Big Day, as Miles' Big Day draws nearer, for any ways you can help. And I saw this, story about maybe the same time as you did, and I think our reaction to the story was both a collective, I wish we had cancer.
Yeah, Make-A-Wish has done great things, you know, like, oh, you can meet a celebrity, or, oh, here's Ron Perlman dressed up as Hellboy, but this is nuts. This is just, because the questions just don't stop. Like, what Batmobile is it going to be? Is it going to be the Tim Burton Batmobile? Is it going to be the Schumacher Batmobile? Is it going to be the Tumbler? If it's the fucking Tumbler, that means they're going to have a fucking tank rolling through San Francisco. That's like the Tumbler. Like, I don't know if you people know, the Tumbler is real. It's real. It gets like 5 miles to the gallon.
But it's real.
But it's fucking real. And it's pushing like 300-400 horsepower. And all I can think is just like, I want to be there. But then the next question is, because this is also opportune, if you wanted to be a costumed villain in San Francisco on this day and really rob a place with impunity.
No, I'm just here for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. I'm not really taking this stack of cash.
Like, don't worry. You just send a request to the to City Hall, and they'll reimburse you for all the money I'm taking from you right now. I'm a part of Little Miles' Batman experience. Well, which villain are you supposed to be? I'm the Creeper. You know, like, just.
You know, like, it's just some hobo in a Safeway garbage bag, and he's just like, ah.
I mean, this this is a beautiful story. And I really hope that this goes off without any sort of hitch, but you know, the questions are fucking endless. And this kid wins Make-A-Wish.
He is. I mean, like, I can't believe, like, there has to have been like some coaching by his parents or something like that.
Is
like,
this is really, yeah. Cause you gotta know that his parents are like comic book fans and they have like steeped this kid in Batman his entire life. Like, heroes are real. Batman will save you from cancer. Because Batman has the Bat computer and that thing can do anything. But like, this kid fucking wins Make-A-Wish, man. Like, I don't want to fucking meet Shaq. I want to be Batman. And you know, so long as it's not like, I want to take a human life, fucking Make-A-Wish makes it happen.
This, I don't know about that whole take a human life thing. I think Andy Dick is pretty cheap. Hey, Andy Dick, some kid wants to kill you for cancer. Wanted to go ahead?
Or well, fucking, like, if some kid says, like, I want to take a life, it's like, all right, well, we're going to call Owen Wilson and see how he's feeling right now.
Oh, God. I don't know. Let's look at those box office receipts for The Intern. Yeah, I think your wish is looking pretty good here, kid. But yeah, I hope you know that if your wish comes true, then this other kid's wish for Wedding Crashers 2 won't happen. I don't know why this 6-year-old kid saw Wedding Crashers.
Terrible parenting. Just terrible parenting. You let your kid watch a Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson movie? Jesus.
I mean, I saw Wedding Crashers back before I was 17, I want to say, 16 or 17. I saw it with my older brother. And
yeah, but that's the demographic.
That's the demographic, but, like, my brother loved that movie. Like, he was the biggest fan of those Owen Wilson, Ben Stiller mafia comedy movies. You know, like, back in the early mid-2000s.
Well, I mean, it started with The Best of Intentions, fucking Rounders, Swingers. When Favreau was still an actor, you know, like, it started with The Best of Intentions, but then fucking Vince Vaughn got it in the mix and really started getting, like, pushed forward into, like, I want to be in the front of all of these movies. Like, dude, you've got a face for radio. I understand that you want to defy convention, but please stop.
He wanted to be this generation's Bill Murray. You could just tell, and it didn't happen. And I guess of all the people that would want to be suicidal after careers like that, you would think it'd be Vince Vaughn, not Owen Wilson.
Yeah, because Owen Wilson, at the very least, at the end of the day, like, yeah, you know, you've got Shanghai Noon and Shanghai Nights under your belt, and I know that that's not the greatest fucking pip in your collar, but you do have Behind Enemy Lines. Like, you do get to say that you were in a movie with Gene Hackman where Gene Hackman wasn't a nut. So that's something to live for. You know, just hang on for one more day and some kid's going to be like, I just saw Behind Enemy Lines. You were great in it. I love that scene with in the woods with the mines, you know.
Yeah. I couldn't sleep after that movie. You were great.
You were great. Weirdest fucking casting, but for some reason that movie just works.
I know. The worst movie for that, though, for my brother, was that remake of Starsky and Hutch. Oh my God, he quoted that movie to death.
Oh man, you know, I didn't so much mind Starsky and Hutch any more than I minded, say, Get Smart.
I know, but the thing about that movie was like that. Remember that whole exchange with them and Will Ferrell while he was in prison?
Yeah.
And for some reason, my brother latched onto that line. It flew right over my head. But like, flash forward 2 years later, after we saw that movie, he comes up to me. He's like, all right, Ben, what? Things are going to get a little weird here. Two dragons. And he just left the room.
I would have thought that he would have been a stand-up guy and just said,
danger zone. Yeah, but this was like 4 years before Archer. So that, you know, before its time, but like he quoted that, you know, like that two dragons line at me, and I didn't know what the hell that meant. It was just
like, I need to get cancer so that I can get Make-A-Wish to kill my brother.
Or like, I want to get cancer so I can make a wish that my brother get a better sense of humor.
Oh my god, I'm thinking about it now, and there is no hope for your nephew.
You know, I'm trying my best. You know, I haven't seen the kid in a while, and I'm thinking, okay, I've got to get something for Christmas. What do you get a baby for Christmas? It's not like they're going to remember anything.
No, here's what you do. You start assembling a box, just a box of like movies. But you play it up like it's like a box of gold. And as the kid grows up, you go, this is your birthright. This is what you're entitled to. Everything in this box is going to dictate who you are in the future.
You must hide this from your father. He must never know.
And then you just fill it with all your favorite movies. And then one day, after having watched all these movies, we'll say that, because it still has to be at a developmental age. So it's, you have to like when you are 10 years old, you can open this box, which is your birthright. And it's filled with like Ghostbusters and all the shit we grew up with. And then one day kid walks in and your brother doesn't even know who his son is anymore. And you get a call from your brother.
It's like, what, Ben, did you do? Have you been indoctrinating my son? It's like, I'm saving him!
I'm saving him from you!
It's just this box full of, like, you know, Land Before Time, Fern Gully, maybe Iron Giant. Yeah, definitely Iron Giant. The Adventures of Pete and Pete. He's going to be a 90s kid in the 2010s.
Yeah. And it'll work. It'll work totally well because it's the perfect experiment. It's like that guy who only talked Klingon to his son.
I'm hearing that story, what was it, a few months back, I want to say? Yeah, hearing that story makes me realize that maybe we need to start having an application process for reproduction. I mean, yeah, he's on the grid now. Like, that kid is his, you know, he has to take care of him, but there should be, like, a monitoring process involved, too. Like, someone goes to the house once a week, say, okay, so has the kids started talking yet? Yes. Speak something, little Billy.
Like, say something, Billy. Kapla! All right, we're calling child services.
You know, like, sirens start busting out of the walls. SWAT team comes in, breaks through the window. Firemen come in with axes and start just chopping wood.
I'm sorry, but if child services finds out that your kid has Elvish or fucking Klingonese as their first language, we're taking him away.
I keep flashing back to that moment on Twitter where Noah linked to the announcement of a child's birth, and his name was Sephiroth Shinra, last name whatever, but there is some couple out there that named their child Sephiroth.
Yeah, and that doesn't shock me because there are multiple kids on this planet named Inuyasha. Congratulations, you named your kid Dog Boy. There are multiple kids who are named Vash. Congratulations, you named your kid Cow. You know, like, that's like, I'm really sorry, like, to bring it up again, but ladies and gentlemen, Le Vache in French means the cow. That is why he is called Vash the Stampede. You name your kid Vash, you are naming him Burger. All right?
Oh, God. But that Inuyasha tidbit fascinates me. I can't imagine that today the parents still think that was a good idea. I mean, like, even the Vash kids, their parents are like, yeah, we named our kid Vash. Vash will always be a cool name. But you would think that, like, maybe, like, 3 or 4 years after kid was born, they're looking at little Inuyasha there and thinking, you know, that anime actually kind of sucked.
We made a mistake.
You're like, guess what? You're Brandon from now on.
Like, I'm really sorry, but there's way too high a quotient of people who name their kids after anime characters. When it's like, okay, so what's your name? Oh, my name is Sasuke. All right, now tell me what your ancestry is. That's German and Irish. Where are your parents? We're gonna call child services.
You know, it's even worse if you're in Japan. Like, yeah, we named our son Akira. Wait, you know, after the character, or like, was there an uncle named Akira somewhere down the line? You'll never know.
Honestly, and that's not to say that I'm above naming kids cool names. All right, my friend, his last name is Justice, and one day we're having a conversation, and I was just talking, like, and he already has a kid, and his kid's name is Trent, which I'm giving away way too much information about my friend, but it doesn't really matter. but I found it kind of sad because it was like, well, I named him after Trent Reznor. Like, you know that Trent Reznor's middle name is Trent, right? That his name is Michael Trent Reznor. But then we started thinking about it, like, okay, well, but he's a big Godzilla fan, and it's like, just think about it, man. Like, you could name a fucking, like, if he had another kid, you could name him fucking Jet Jaguar, so then he'd be Jet Jaguar Justice. He'd be the 3J. That would be fucking amazing, you know? Or if you had a, because this was a really bad one, if you have a daughter, then you could name her Final.
Final Justice.
Yep. How fucking, because I believe, you know, like, I believe that sometimes you just need to, like, to protect your child, you need to give them a name that strikes fear into the hearts of other children.
Isn't that right, Marcellus?
That does not strike fear into the hearts of other children. Marcellus wasn't a cool name until Pulp Fiction. But I've thought about, like, if I ever have a son, I want to name him, like, Talon or something. Because I've known kids that have been named, like, Raven and Phoenix and, you know, like, really cool kids. But just to think about that, like, if you had a daughter and your last name is Justice and her name is fucking Final. So then during roll call, Final Justice, is Final Justice here? You know?
My friend Gabe, he says he never wants kids, but if he did have a son, he would name him Achilles. Achilles Herzig.
Which, all by itself, that's just a name that speaks volumes about Gabe. Gabe, yeah. Our wonderful camera tech. he's our everything guy out in Bennett the Sage land.
Basically, I believe every good video series needs to have that one.
They need a Nella. That's what they need.
Not so much a Nella, but just like, hey, it's that guy. You know, like, you don't know his name, you don't know too much about him, but you just, you remember seeing him, excuse me, sorry, you just remember seeing him from somewhere, but you're not quite sure where, but you recognize that face, and it just kind of makes your day a little better.
Yeah, because you go, like, oh, that guy popped up, it's the guy who got hit in the face with a PS3.
Like, oh my god, yeah, it's that guy!
And Gabe is that guy. But, yeah, like, I just think that you should have, like, if you have a kid, you gotta, you know, name him something that strikes fear into the hearts of other children. And Inuyasha just doesn't fucking do it, I'm sorry. Like, Miles is a cool name. Yeah. It's not a name that you hear too often. So, this kid named Miles, it's not like I sat there and, like, it's like, of course this little idiot kid is named Miles and he wants to be Batman. Like, no, Miles is a pretty cool name. So... So he gets to die with a cool name, and he gets to die knowing that for a day...
Hey, who said anything about dying? Okay, this kid's not dying. We don't say the D word around here, Mark.
I'm sorry. But when Make-A-Wish gets involved... I mean, if the kid lives, awesome! Congratulations. He's better than Batman. He survived cancer! I honestly... My thought is that, you know, if you survive cancer and you're not a douche about it, more power to you. Because I've met some people who are just like, you know, like, I don't care what you fucking say, I survived cancer. You know, like don't tell me your first world problems. have you ever had radiation coursing through your veins and not even get the dignity of spider powers?
You know, what'd you do? You take that guy, you sit him right in front of, like, a war veteran who never got over it. It's like, you never got radiation through your veins. I saw my best friend's head explode. I was peeing blood for 2 months. I wish I was peeing blood for 2 months. It's just, and eventually they blow each other.
Oh my god. All right.
I think we capped our episode off pretty well. Mark, bring us on home.
As always, outro music provided by Zero Reynolds. You can follow him on Twitter at Zergester, that's XERGester. You can now take Super Toolshed wherever you go. Just go to benthesage.com/supertoolshed. For Bennett the Sage, I'm Mark the Engineer. Until next we beat, the shed is shut.